Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one, he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Morning. Good to see you all this morning. I want to thank Drake Levishev for teaching last week on another parable of Jesus. A great teaching on that, and it was great to get away. I know many of you were probably gone last weekend. I was with some old college buddies. Every year we go up to Northern California on Memorial Day weekend and hang out and play basketball, play golf, and it was a great time. I learned the secret to not having a sore back after golf. I play basketball. I play basketball 3 days a year, which is the 3 days of this trip. And I always come home with this just painful back, and I finally learned the secret of not having a sore back. Don't try. That's beautiful. It's the beginning of wisdom. It's the beginning of age. Just play at 20%. It's great. Great to be back. It was good to get away, and it's always good to be with you all. So as you can see from your bulletins, today we are starting a 4-week series called The Grace of Giving. And I'm going to be talking about money and wealth and possessions and mostly giving. And I want to just lay out my cards right up front and let you know why we're doing this series right now. Okay, so just want to lay it out for you. In a couple months, basically at the end of July, we're going to come to you with some significant financial needs. Okay, many of you know that we have been deferring maintenance on this building for many years. And we've had a team thinking about this for a long time now. And we're finally ready to come to you with a plan to repair and renovate this building. And we're really excited about that. We feel really good about it. We feel like it's a responsible, exciting way of what we want to do. And we're going to come to you with that at the end of July, okay? And that's going to take some of your resources. So I just want to say right up front, that's what's coming in. That's not why we're doing this series, but that's why we're doing this series now. And what I would ask you to do is just wait for us to present what we want to do before you start asking questions about specifically what we're going to do. So just give us till the end of July, and we're going to come to you and do that. And the other thing is that we as elders, we've heard from a lot of you consistently that we don't talk about giving enough. That we don't teach on giving, we don't communicate our financial needs. So we said, you know what, we're gonna just go for it. We're not gonna just present this financial need, but we're gonna teach on money and giving, and then we're gonna lay it out and see what the Lord does. So don't wanna pull a bait and switch on you and talk about giving and then say, oh, by the way, we've got this need while you're thinking about it, but we just wanna be upfront from the beginning. So I'm gonna talk about wealth and giving for the next 4 weeks. And I will say I'm a little ambivalent about this topic for obvious reasons. On the one hand, it's a topic that makes me nervous to talk about. It's something that's very personal and sensitive to each of us. There's, you know, a lot of varying opinions and feelings about the subject. But on the other hand, I'm excited about it because it's a topic that's so relevant to every single one of us. Some mornings I get up here and I feel insecure because I know that none of you have been spending time late at night worrying whether this Greek verb is a present tense or a past tense. And I've been thinking, you know, all week long, which is it, and what does that mean? And this is a topic where I know every single one of you has been thinking about this topic in some capacity, your resources, your wealth, your money, whatever, this week. So it's something that is so relevant. And for me, that is a very exciting thing to be able to speak into. And, you know, money, material resources, there's something that's just so tangible about it. I mean, it's kind of, this is where the rubber meets the road in terms of our faith. It's one of the places where that takes place. And there's other areas in our lives where we can kind of get away with maybe, you know, spiritualizing something or theologizing something. But money is one of those things where all you have to do is take a look at our credit card statements or our bank accounts or our resources, and you can see what a person actually values, what they actually spend their resources on. No matter what they say they value, it's a particularly tangible expression of our faith. And I think it's also a tangible expression to other people. It's one of the most tangible ways we can be different in this culture, because it's something that people can actually look at and see and go, okay, they value certain things based off of how they spend their resources. I love this first quote that I gave you from Billy Graham. Tell me what you think about money, and I can tell you what you think about God. Money is a very tangible expression of our faith. So let me just, I'm giving you all these, you know, disclaimers as we start. I'm going to get to my sermon in a second. But my goal in this is to encourage you. It is to inspire you. It is to encourage all of us to see our wealth and resources in a particular way, that we'd be inspired to do something with it. My goal is not to make us feel guilty. And I know that we will probably feel some guilt along the way, because it's impossible not to when you open Scripture in Orange County and just read what it says. We're going to feel some of that. But just know my heart is to inspire and to encourage us. And my prayer really is this, that through this series, God would free us in certain ways. That the reality is this stuff that's in our lives, it tends to grab hold of us. It takes hold of us. And my prayer is that God, in new ways, in fresh ways, would free us up from the clutches of our stuff. And my other prayer is for the world. And it's this, that he would unleash the resources that are in this room. And if you think about it, there are a ton of resources represented in this room. And my prayer is that he would, in a fresh way, unleash his resources for his kingdom, for people, for causes that are in need of what we can give. So that's my heart, that's my prayer for what we're going to do. And the way we're starting this, you just heard the passage. Today we're going to start by talking about perspective, talking about our minds. I'm thinking of Romans 12:1, where Paul says, let's be transformed by the renewing of our minds. That's what I want to do today. Let's transform our minds, transform our perspective on wealth. And then next week, we're going to talk about what happens when God not only transforms our perspective, but transforms our hearts, when his grace gets inside our hearts and it leads to this generous giving. So I assume you're there. Matthew 25, verse 14, very familiar parable to most of you, the parable of the talents, about a rich guy who entrusts his property to servants and then goes away for a long time and then returns and settles accounts with them. And of course, I think the interpretation here is that the master is Jesus Christ. And the idea is he has entrusted us with certain things, and he has gone away, and one day he is going to return to discover what we have done with what he's entrusted us with. And I want to acknowledge right up front that I think this parable is about more than just money and material resources. I think Jesus is also talking about the gifts, the abilities he's given us, the time he's given us, the opportunities, the relationships. It might even be more about that than just material possessions, but certainly material possessions is a part of that. And since that's what this series is about, that's what I'm going to talk about. And I'm going to stay real high level today. I'm not going to get into all the details of this parable, because what I discovered is I just stayed high level on this parable. I mean, if we just take verse 14 and verse 19, okay, let me just read it to you right now. Verse 14, again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. And then verse 19, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. If all we do is take those two verses and just stay high level about what that implies for us and our resources, I'm going to suggest that the perspective is radical. And it's so common, and you all have heard what I'm going to say to you today. You've probably heard it 1,000 times, but it is so radical if we would let just those two verses and the realities that they communicate get inside our minds. So I'm going to stay high level, and I'm going to talk about three key realities that I see from this parable, and I'm going to tell them to you up front. Here it is. First one is this. First key reality, it's God's property. It's God's money. Second one, he's entrusted his wealth to us, and he wants us to invest it in his, to grow his kingdom. And then third, one day there's going to be a reckoning where he holds us accountable for how we invested his resources. Okay, so I want to talk about those three realities, and we'll go from there. So the first one is this, and this is the most fundamental reality of stewardship. It's this. It's all God's property. Okay, look at verse 14 again. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. Okay, it's his property, and he's entrusting it to them. And that's the most fundamental perspective about stewardship, is it is all God's. Whatever he has given us, whatever's in our life, ultimately it belongs to him. Let me give you some verses to back this up. Psalm 24. Okay, again, I know you've heard this a bunch of times, but try to sit with this. And sorry, I wanted to say one other thing. This is a series where you don't want to be thinking about the person next to you who really needs to hear this. Okay, this is another one of those series. Okay. They really need to hear this. This is for each one of us. Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. 1 Chronicles 29. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor, for everything in heaven and on earth, everything is yours. And then in the New Testament, that is applied to Jesus Christ. Colossians 1 says this, for all things, speaking of Christ, whether in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, all things were created in him, all things were created through him, and all things were created for him. So that there's nothing in the universe that Christ can't point to and say, that is mine. Ultimately, that is mine. And most fundamentally, what I want us to recognize, even before we think about our money and our resources, is that fundamentally we are his. We are God's. As his creatures, we ultimately don't belong to ourselves. We belong to God. And I was sitting with this week, and I want you to just do something right now. Humor me here. Just take a deep breath in and out. Okay? That breath was given to you by God. One more breath. In and out. God is the one who is sustaining every single one of your breaths, moment by moment. If he stopped doing that, you would cease to breathe. You are his creature. You belong to him. And as Christians, if you're a Christian in this room, we doubly belong to him, because not only did he create us, but he purchased us with the death of his son. 1 Corinthians 6, you're not your own. You were bought at a price. God paid for your life at great cost, and so you are no longer your own. So fundamentally, we're not our own. And then, of course, that applies to everything we have, our money, our resources, everything, all that we have. And I just want to acknowledge, this is such a counterintuitive thing to grasp, that my money is not actually mine, but it's God's, because it's one of those things that we worked for, right? I mean, I didn't see God putting in 40 hours or 80 hours a week. I mean, I got up early, I worked for it, I earned it. This is my money. And that's just natural for us to think like that. This is my home. And yet Scripture says something different. And Moses warns the Israelites of thinking like that. He says this when they are coming into the promised land. He says, when you enter the land and grow prosperous, you may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands produce this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth and so confirms his covenant. And so Paul sums it up great in 1 Corinthians 4 when he says, what do you have that you didn't receive? And the answer, of course, is nothing. You have nothing that you didn't receive from God. And ultimately, it is his. It belongs to him. And I know that's so basic, but it is so radical. It requires a transformation of our minds to say, this is all God's stuff. So you think about that wallet in your pocket right now, and whatever is in there and whatever that represents, say, that fundamentally, it's not my money. That is God's money. You're going to walk out today, and you're going to walk into a car and want to remind ourselves, you know, that's not my car. That is, at the most basic level, that's actually God's car. And you're going to go home to a home or an apartment. It's not my home. That is God's home. You're going to, you know, get on your cool new iPad or whatever, and fundamentally, that's God's cool new iPad. And I was thinking about that and trying to let that sink into my own mind this week. And I had this picture, and the picture is like when you go to a furniture store and you see all this stuff, and it's all got price tags on it. Okay, and I was at home in my apartment, and I was thinking like that. But I thought, what if instead of price tags over everything that I have, what if there was a little like property of sticker on everything I had, and it was property of God, okay? And I was sitting in my family room, and I was thinking, what if my couch had that property of God sticker on it? And what if my TV had that property of God sticker, and my refrigerator, and my kitchen table? I thought, what if I walked into the bathroom and took a look at myself in the mirror, and there's this big property of God sticker on my forehead? I went into my bedroom and looked at my wife, and there's this big property of God sticker, and I looked at her little pregnant belly and saw this little property of God sticker on her belly. What if I opened my wallet and I looked at my credit card, and the credit card said property of God? How simple and yet how radical would that be? My wife and I have a way that we try to remind ourselves of this with our cars. When we got married, she brought a blue car into the family. I brought a white car. And so at first it was, are we going to take your car or my car? And then we realized, no, okay, these are our cars now. And then we said, actually, we're being real pastoral, these are God's cars. So now when we're going somewhere, we say, are we going to take God's blue car or are we going to take God's white car? And actually, now we've upgraded to a gray car. So it's God's gray car or God's white car. And that's our little way of reminding ourselves, this is all God's. Now, obviously, that radically changes the conversation about stewardship and giving, doesn't it? The question becomes not how much of my money will I, out of the kindness and generosity of my heart, give to God. That's not the question. The question is this: what am I going to choose to do with his stuff? That's the fundamental question of stewardship. So first point I want to say, it's all God's. It's his property. It's his resources. Second point we see, Again, very basic but radical. While it's all God's, it has been entrusted to you and me. He has entrusted it to us. Again, verse 14, it'll be like a man going on a journey who called his servants, and he entrusted his property to them. It's the master's stuff, but he entrusts it to them. And his purpose, what's clear from the parable, his purpose in entrusting it to them is so that they would invest it so that when he returns, his possessions will have gotten bigger because of what they've done with it. His estate, his property would have grown. And so their role is one of a steward or a manager who is supposed to invest another person's stuff in the interest of the owner of the stuff. And so in this parable, Jesus is saying this, guys, as my followers, I have given you my stuff. I'm entrusting it to you. And I want you to invest it so that when I come back, my kingdom is bigger because of what you've done with my stuff. That's the responsibility. That's the privilege I'm giving to you. Now, let me just be, I think this goes without saying. Is everybody okay down there? Tobertys? Yeah? Okay. I just want to make sure that wasn't a faint and that was just, okay. So, I think this goes without saying. I don't think Jesus is saying, I've given you material resources, and the goal, what I want you to do is make more and more material resources. Okay, I don't think that's what he's saying. He's saying, I've given you these resources, and I want you to invest them in ways that expand my kingdom. And here I think this it's a spiritual kingdom as much as it is a material kingdom. So he's saying, I'm giving you this stuff, but I want you to use it not to make much of yourself in the world, but to make much of me. I want you to use it so my kingdom expands, so that more people come to know me, so that my fame, my honor, my reputation is bigger when I come back than it was when I left because of what you've done with the stuff that I've entrusted with you. And of course, this goes beyond material stuff to our gifts and abilities, but it certainly includes our material stuff. So let me ask this. What would that actually look like? I'm going to throw some ideas. What could it look like to invest his material resources in order to further his kingdom, okay? Just a couple ideas. Millions of ways that you could do this. Just as there are plenty of ways these three servants could have invested the money. Could have, you know, they could have started a company, they could have put it in the bank, they could have put it in the market. Millions of ways they could do this. So let me throw out a couple ways that one could choose to do this. You could have $5,000 laying around in an account, and you could say, you know what, I want to give that $5,000 to North Rise University. Because I love what North Rise is doing in Zambia. It is raising up a new group of pastors, a group of young leaders who are in a Christ-centered university. And I think that is God is expanding his kingdom through that ministry. So I'm going to give this to that. That would be a way you could do it. Or you could say, I'm going to invest $25 a week. And I'm going to take a friend out to lunch once a week and treat them to lunch and have a spiritual conversation with them. That's going to be a way I'm going to use his resources to further his kingdom. Maybe you say, I got 25 grand. I'm going to put up a bunch of billboards around the freeways that have these really provocative signs about Jesus loving you or about getting people to think, spiritually. Okay, that wouldn't be the choice that I would do with the resources, but that would be a way a person might, someone might do something. And of course, it's not just spending your money. It's using our possessions, using what we have to further his kingdom. So maybe you've got a really nice house with a really nice yard. And you say, how can we use this for God's kingdom? Well, we'll invite a group of, a Young Life group of high schoolers who want to come every Wednesday night and have worship and a time of teaching here in our house. Or maybe you've got a nice drum set sitting at home and you go, I want to give that to a youth group that can use that for worship. However you can use your possessions. And the reality is we'll probably... as we start thinking about, there's probably certain possessions that we own that we're going to recognize, these are probably just too extravagant to really get a good use of God's kingdom. You might have a $200,000 car and you're thinking, how can I use this for God's kingdom? I guess I could take a poor person out for a ride once a week and, but probably you're thinking, as I think about this, I should probably sell this car and buy 7 cars and give those to various, nonprofit Christian organizations that need transportation. Or you got stuff laying in the garage and you're thinking, I should probably just sell this stuff and then give away. Okay. All that to say, there's a million different ways that people could think of investing resources in God's kingdom, and this passage doesn't tell us how to do that. The issue is this: how can I use the Christ's resources that he has given me so that when he returns, his estate, his kingdom is bigger than when he left? And notice, I love this, just a little detail. Notice the key is not how much has been entrusted to us. The key is, are we going to be faithful with what's been entrusted to us? You know, you look at verse 15 for a second. One he gives 5 talents to, one he gives 2 talents, and one talent, each according to their ability. So it doesn't matter how much he's given us. The only important thing is, are we being faithful with the great or the little that we've been given? So again, we're thinking, how do we transform our minds? And here's the question of a steward. Again, the question is not this: what do I want to do with my money? That's not the question we want to be asking. It's this: how would Christ want me to invest his stuff in order to further his kingdom? How can I use everything he's given me so that people come to know him more, so that his fame is spread in my life and my relationships throughout the world? So first reality, it's all God's. Second reality, but it's been entrusted to us. And third reality is this: one day, there's going to be a reckoning where each one of us has to account for how we used God's resources. And of course, this is what we see in verse 19, where the master returns after a long time and settles accounts with each of them. And I want to pause there because it's a pretty significant reality, and just ask you to think about your life right now and your use of what you've got. Do we live this way with our material possessions? Do we live thinking, one day I'm going to be held accountable for how I used all this stuff? I'm going to stand before Christ and have to give an account for what I did with all this stuff that he gave me in my life. Scripture talks about having a boldness and a confidence when we think about that future day when we're going to see Christ. 1 John says this: when Christ appears, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before him at his coming. And that's what I see in these first 2 servants, right? When the master returns, there's this confidence, there's this boldness that they have because they went out, they invested his stuff, they got a return on it. And so when he comes back, there's this boldness. Look at verse 20. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. Look, I've gained 5 more for you. And look at the master's response. His master replied, well done. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'm going to put you in charge of lots of things. Now come and share in your master's happiness. There's this confidence they have at the return of their master. And of course, the 3rd servant, he doesn't invest it. He just kind of, you know, He buries it. And so when the master returns, he doesn't come with confidence. He comes with an excuse on his lips, doesn't he? He's got this kind of theological, rationalized excuse. And the master ultimately says, you know what, you are actually being wicked and lazy. So let me ask you this question. Have you asked yourself this question? Am I using my resources, my money, my stuff, in such a way that I feel like I'm going to have confidence when the Lord returns and I have to give an account for how I've used his stuff? And if I could leave you with one question today, it's this question right here. Am I currently using my stuff, my resources, my money in such a way that I'm going to hear, well done. Yes, well done, good and faithful servant. It brings me joy to see what you've done with your stuff. And I want us to sit with that for a second. And just think about, as you go about your week, again, this is a pretty radical transformation of our minds, but as you consider every purchase you make, okay, as you consider how you're going to use the stuff that you have, do you stop and go, is what I'm about to do with my money, is this something that's going to bring Christ joy, that he's looking at and going, yes, well done? As I'm looking at, you know, that pair of jeans, or that bottle of wine, or that cable TV, or that vacation, whatever, you name it, whatever the purchase is, do I think that Christ is looking down on this going, yeah, yes, well done, good and faithful servant? Now, I don't know about you, but for me, that question cuts through a lot of stuff, and it really clarifies a lot for my own heart. Because I'm tempted to ask a very different question when it comes to spending. And the question that I want to ask is this: what's wrong with spending my money on this? What's wrong with buying this $200 pair of jeans, or this, you know, $200 bottle of wine, or this, you know, whatever it is? What's wrong with that? I mean, I worked for this money. I earned this money. I should be able to do with it what I want. And everybody around me is spending their money on this item. What is wrong with that? And this parable confronts me with a different question, which isn't what's wrong with that, but what is good and right about that? Is that something that's going to bring Christ joy in light of all the ways that I could spend his resources to further his kingdom? Is this something that he's going to say, well done? Well done, good and faithful servant. Is this the best way that I could use his resources? Again, this is a radical perspective. I doubt the last time you went and bought a shirt, you were at the checkout line thinking, I wonder if Christ is up there thinking well done about this, right? We probably didn't think much of anything. We just bought it. And I don't know how this is connecting with you, but if it connects with you like this, me, there's something about this that actually feels pretty overwhelming. Right? I mean, this is a big responsibility. And we might feel this and go, I don't want to have to take on that kind of response. I don't want to have to think like that about how I use my stuff. I don't want to think about when I buy a cup of coffee or a shirt or a cool new toy or you know, whatever it is. I don't want to have to think like that. I like just being able to do it and not think about it. And you might be tempted to, as you feel that, to say, this feels just too radical. And I mean, where do we draw the line? I mean, there's always a better way I could use my money, right? There's always some poor person who could use more money than I could use this cup of Starbucks coffee. Does that mean I can never buy another cup of Starbucks coffee? Where's the line that we need to draw? And I want to just speak into that and just say, don't worry, none of us are in danger of crossing over that line, okay? Just kind of get that out, because what we want to do is say, that's so radical, that can't be right, so I'm just not going to touch it. And I want to just encourage us to say, I've never met a Christian in Orange County that's in danger of crossing that line, okay? So that's not our danger. So let's just leave that where it is and be okay with that. And let me just remind you that these things are true. This perspective is true whether we want to think about it or not, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, right? I mean, it really is all of God's stuff. And that's still true whether we acknowledge that or not. And sometimes he shows us that by, you know, taking it away from us. And we realize, okay, that wasn't my stuff, that was God's stuff. And he really has entrusted this stuff to us. Whether we want that responsibility or not, whether we want to acknowledge that, he has done that. And one day, he is going to hold us accountable for how we've dealt with his stuff. And we can pretend that's not going to happen, but it's not going to change the fact that it's going to happen. So, how do we respond to these realities? How do we respond to this call of responsibility to be God's stewards? Do we ignore it? Or do we react and respond in fear and get very careful and cautious about what we do with every cent? Do we respond with action? What do we do? And here's the main point I want to leave you with today. How we respond, here's the key. It all depends on our view of the master. It all depends on what kind of a guy we think this master is. And I would suggest that that's the key to this parable, is that you've got these three servants, and they have, two of them have a very different view of the master than the third one. And their view of the master is what leads them to do what they do. So I want to just finish up by taking a look at their view of the master. Let's start with this third servant. What is his view of the master? Look at verse 24. This is his explanation. Remember, he just buried the talent, this thing of gold, you know, a bag of gold, or basically. And he's giving an account to his master. Verse 24, the man who had received the one talent came and said this, "Master," he said, "I have come to know that you are a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. So in light of that, that responsibility that's been placed on me, I was afraid. And I went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. I've brought it back intact and I haven't lost it. Now he says some things about the master, and part of that is true. Look at verse 26. The master affirms this. He says, you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So part of his understanding of the master is true. That is true. The master, he harvests where he has not sown. But the servant sees something else. He sees the master as fundamentally, you saw that word, I knew that you're a hard man. He's harsh. He's severe. He's powerful. He's austere. He's a very intimidating owner to work for. And so that leads him, his view of the master leads him to a very fear-based, cautious response. And here's what I think goes through his head. He says, first of all, I've been given this talent, but the reality is I'm not going to get any of the benefits of investing this talent. That's the deal with my masters. He reaps what he hasn't sown. I'm going to do all the work, but he's going to reap the benefit. Well, I don't like that. But more than that, this guy is a hard man. He is powerful. He's rich. He's a very intimidating guy. And I don't want to screw it up. You know, I don't think I can possibly please somebody as powerful and rich as him. I can't possibly satisfy him. And what's more, if I were to lose his stuff, that would be the worst. I mean, this is a severe guy. I guarantee you, he would make me pay back every last penny that I lost. So in light of who he is, the safest bet for me is just to not do anything. It's just to bury it and hide it and keep it safe. At least I won't lose it. And so when he comes back, at least I can give him back what is him. That's my safest bet, and I'm going to do that. So his view of who the master is drives him to this very fear-based, cautious decision. And let me suggest that the other two servants, we don't actually get insight into their minds, they have a different view of the master. And it's a view that we can all see if we just read the details of this passage. So let me suggest three things that we know about this master, who he is, from the passage. First thing is this. This master is an incredibly generous guy. Okay? Anybody know how much a talent, this is a measurement of weight in gold, anybody have any idea how much a talent is in those days? It would be not the equivalent of like $20 or $100. It'd be, there's a range, but somewhere between $100,000 and $1 million. Okay? This is a big something that would take people of those days maybe 20 years to earn through just regular work. This is a vast amount of money. So this owner is a guy who's incredibly generous with his stuff. And I think all of us, if we just step back and look at our lives, we would acknowledge that about our Heavenly Master. He has been incredibly generous. He has entrusted a lot of stuff to us. And you see at the end of the parable, he is generous in the end. He says, you are faithful with this. I'm going to give you more of my stuff. That's my reward, to give you more of my stuff. So first off, this master is incredibly generous. Second thing, this master is a risk taker. Okay? He entrusts his stuff, a lot of his stuff, to servants, to just ordinary people. And he says, you go and you figure out what to do with my stuff. I want you to invest it. I want you to multiply it. I'm not even going to tell you what I want you to do. I'm giving it to you. I'm entrusting it to you. I'm not going to micromanage you, but I'm going to give it to you. You go out, figure it out. Go do something. But when I come back, I want you to have multiplied it somehow. Okay, that's a master who is a risk taker, right? I mean, he's not cautious. He's not playing it safe. He's empowering people. He's giving them this great opportunity, and he's not telling them exactly what to do with it. So he's incredibly generous. He's an incredible risk taker. And then finally, he is a very joyful master. Look at verse 23. He says, well done, good and faithful servant. And then he ends it by saying this, now come and share your master's happiness. You've been faithful. Now come, share my joy. Let's celebrate together. So this is a master who is very generous, who is a risk taker, and who is full of joy. And the servants, those first two servants, they recognize that. They see who he is, and so they respond in kind. And both of them, they immediately go out and they take risks and they go out and invest this wealth and they gain, you know, double what they were given for their master, and they come confident and they get to share in his joy. And let me just suggest to you, as we consider this responsibility that we've been given, to remind you, this is who our God is. We have a God who is not cautious, who is not fear-driven himself. We have a God who is big and who is full of joy and who is generous and who is a risk taker, who's entrusted his stuff to scrubs like you and me. And he said, I want you to go out and I want you to invest it. And we could say, how? And he says, I'm not going to tell you. Just go and do it. Go out. Be proactive. Get creative. You figure it out. But I'm giving you my stuff and I want to come back and I want my stuff to have been multiplied, my kingdom. And when that happens, I want to come and you're going to share in my joy and I'm going to give you more of my stuff. That's the kind of God, that's the kind of master that we serve. And that means everything, I think, for how we respond to this responsibility that he's given us. I was thinking of an analogy this week. You guys got 2 more minutes in you? Okay, good. You know, what if a friend of yours had a really nice car, okay? $150,000, fill in the blank, your favorite car. They own this car. But they're going out of the country for 5 years. And your friend says, I'm leaving for 5 years. I'm giving you my car. It's yours for 5 years. I'm going to come back and I want it back, but it's yours for 5 years. So, and you've never owned a car, you know, over $5,000 in your life, okay? What do you do with the car? It all depends on your view of your friend. What kind of a guy or gal is my friend? And you might be tempted to think, based off of one view, is, you know what, this is really nice car, and I just don't want to screw it up, okay? So I'm just going to leave it in the garage for 5 years, and I don't want to get a scratch on it. I don't want to ruin the upholstery. I don't want to touch it. And I want him or her, when they come home, I want to go, it is in the exact same shape that you left it in. I've given back what's yours. But the friend might say, based off of who they are, say, that's not what I had in mind at all. I gave the thing to you. I wanted you to use it. I was hoping when I came back that the upholstery would be all worn down and there might even be a few scratches. That's why I gave it to you, to go out and use it and have these great memories of taking people on trips and going on road trips. That's why I gave you the car. And that, I think, is the kind of master that this parable is touching on. A God who says, I've given you this stuff. I don't want you to keep it safe. I want you to go invest it. Go use it. But don't invest it for yourself. Invest it for me. That's the big key there. Go out and do it. And I want to come back and I want to see that people have come to know me because of how you've used all my stuff that I've entrusted to you. So that's the perspective that I want to leave us with as we start this series regarding our money and possessions. Not a negative perspective that makes us feel guilty and says, stop spending. I just need to be more careful and cautious and I need to feel guilt and all that. But rather say, no, it's not that I need to stop. It's just that I need to start using it for the right reasons. I need to start using it for God's purposes and his kingdom in the world. And I can be creative. He's given it to me. And I'm going to do it differently than my friend's going to do it. And he's saying, I'm entrusting you. Now go figure it out. Go use it for my kingdom. So this parable, to finally close this off, I think what it is, more than a warning about our responsibility, it's an invitation. It's an invitation to leave behind our little self-centered kingdoms where we are building up stuff and toys and you name it for ourselves, and where we're spending in ways that make us feel as significant as the person next door, or where we're filling those accounts to make ourselves feel safe and secure. It's an invitation to abandon that self-centered kingdom and to enter into the larger purposes that God is working in the world and saying, how can I use all this stuff to get on board with that? And that, I would suggest, is a great adventure. And the idea is, as we do that, one day we're going to stand before him and we're going to hear these great words, well done. Well done, good and faithful servant. Let's pray. Well, Father, thank you for who you are, that you are incredibly generous. I just think of the resources represented in this room. and just how extravagantly generous you have been with us. And it's such a blessing. Thank you that you are a risk taker, that you've entrusted that much stuff to folks like us who might screw it up. And yet you've taken that risk on us. And so we come before you and we want to be grateful. And we want to think in this next month about how can we use your stuff to do things that are going to bring you great pleasure. And we don't know how to do that. We need your help in doing that. And the reality is we all know we are so tempted to clutch onto this stuff for our own desires and goals. And we need you to get inside and to free us up and to convince us in our hearts that there is actually more life to be had in giving these things away than there is in using them and storing them up for ourselves. So we ask your Spirit to do a fresh work in our lives today and this next month especially. And as we do that, that your kingdom would grow as people come to know you and understand who you are through our use of your resources. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.